Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time. With your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy is good.
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
You guys not allowed. Nah, I'm just kidding.
What time is it? Big time
hoops. My mentality was to go out and win at any cost.
The Chicago Bulls have won the NBA championship.
Jordan is the most talented player in the NBA by far.
The show of the 90s, the team of the 90s.
How you doing?
Whenever they speak Michael Jordan, they should speak Scottie Pippen.
We created an image that people want to live up to. I think that's all you can hope for.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? We are back for another week in our continuing series covering the documentary that's taken over the world, The Last Dance on ESPN. And you know what? I can't do this by myself. Every Jordan needs a Pippen. Every Horace Grant needs a Nick Anderson. And so every Gary Payton needs a Detlef Schrempf. And to that end, let me bring in my co-host, my tag team partner from the City of Angels. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Marcus. Ain't nobody got time for you, BJ Armstrong. Vandenberg, what's going on, brother?
Why can't it be Sean Chip?
I mean, Detlef Schrempf is funny.
All right.
Because in my head, was it Kenny Mayne or Dan Patrick that used to be like the Detlef Schrempf?
I think it was Kenny Mayne.
Kenny Mayne, yeah. That's what was going through my head when I was thinking up Supersonics from the 90s.
Hersey Hawkins.
Oh, man, they had some good players, man.
Sam Perkins.
Yep. Patrick Ewing in the twilight years.
We don't talk about that run with Patrick.
Oh man, was that when Patrick tried to grow out his hair with the little braids?
Yep. Yeah.
It's like when Jerry Rice, when Jerry Rice was an Oakland Raider, for you young people that only know Jerry Rice from the great 49ers highlights, there was a time period when Marcus and I were probably, in college maybe you in high school, but Jerry Rice was an Oakland Raider.
This was probably college, like early 2000s.
Okay, yeah. So about 20 years ago now, people. So Jerry Rice was an Oakland Raider, had done his hair up in braids, which is all cool, which is all well and good. The problem, Marcus Vandenberg, is Jerry Rice wasn't 22. He wasn't even 32 at the time, I think. If anything, he was closer to 42.
He was 39, 2001.
39. And so to have braids, you must have hair. And Jerry didn't have the most hair at the time, people. So his braids, connected, it looked like his braids were pulling his hairline back, basically, is what I'm trying to say. Like, imagine LeBron James if he tried to get braids today. It wouldn't work.
No.
Like, greatness as an athlete does not mean that you have a great hairline.
This is how good Jerry Rice, though, was at age 40. 1,200 yards, 92 catches, 7 touchdowns.
Woo! That was with Rich Gannon, right?
Yeah, 2002.
Yeah, Jerry Rice was still a good receiver, man. Like, I think if Jerry Rice knew about that Brett Favre copper technology back then like he does now, maybe Jerry could have played an extra season.
Maybe. But he's the joke for receivers for a reason.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Jerry Rice. Maybe one day they'll do a documentary on those 49ers.
Of the 80s?
Yeah. You know they got to have stories, man. If you out in California in the 80s, Montana, one of the most famous athletes on the planet.
If they do, that's never really come up. Like, they're not associated with being a party team or a team that was linked to drugs or anything like that.
No, they didn't have a White House like the Cowboys.
No.
at least Joe kept it out in the public. Joe was smart about it.
Yeah. Speaking of football players, by the way.
Yes.
Your man Earl Thomas.
What's going on with Earl?
You heard about the story last week, right?
No. I must have missed it. What's going on with Uncle Earl?
Oh, you missed this story? Oh, even better. Even better. Earl Thomas. This was last week, but Earl Thomas goes on Instagram around, I think, 8 or 9 o'clock at night and basically said, look, TMZ is about to drop this story. My wife and I are cool, but just wanted to give you a heads up that, the story is about to come out. My agent told me. Mm-hmm. 5 minutes later, the story drops, and the TMZ headline is, NFL star held at gunpoint by wife and blew up over alleged cheating.
Wow. Come on, Earl.
What had happened was Earl and his wife, Nina, they got into it. She was upset that he was drinking. He decided to go out. His brother picks him up. They go out. Nina goes and figures out on Snapchat that he's with another woman. And decides to call up her homegirls to roll up on Earl and his brother in Austin.
Wow.
She was tipped off because there was some purple lighting in the Snapchat. So she was driving around Austin looking for this purple lighting coming from the window.
She was on her CSI.
She was. She finds the location. Mind you, this is 3:41 in the morning in Austin.
And also, mind you, Marcus, ain't we still in the middle of a pandemic?
Yes. This happened April 13th, so right in the middle of the pandemic. Yes.
Proceed.
Yes. So Nina Glapp grabbed Earl's 9mm Beretta, and she did not intend to use the Beretta. She just wanted to scare him. So she took out the clip, but didn't realize she left one in the chamber. So that's important later on. Ooh. So they arrive at the house, and this is according to TMZ, quote, when the women arrived at the house, they discovered Earl and Seth naked in bed with other women. Seth being his brother. His brother. more from TMZ. That's when Nina admits she pulled out the gun and put it to Earl's head.
Oh, no.
That she took out the magazine thinking that the gun could not fire. But cops say Nina was unaware the gun had a round in the chamber. Luckily for Earl, he was able to get the gun away from Nina. One of the other women that was with Nina was the, I think, either wife or ex-wife of Earl's brother, Seth, who was there with another woman. Nina got arrested. Her crew got arrested. Earl did not get arrested. And there is video, supposedly, that has not been released yet. That shows at least Nina striking Earl in the nose before, you know, the cops broke it up. So.
Damn.
So, yeah.
That's a 30 for 30 right there. Like,
yeah.
What if I told you that one of the greatest safeties of all time wasn't safe off the field? Damn. So yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, Marcus. So, mind you, again, this is all happening during a pandemic where people are supposed to be socially distant.
In someone's Airbnb, yes.
So, yeah, your Airbnbs are always, you know, they hit and miss.
Yes.
Sometimes you get a really nice one, sometimes, So Earl and his brother decide to go meet up with these young women, mm-hmm. and they all inhabiting the same bed mm-hmm. when Earl's wife and her homegirls roll up on Earl with a gun that she thinks is doesn't have any ammo in it.
Correct.
But in fact it does.
Yes, one bullet.
So if she had happened to pull the trigger.
And I guess her finger was on the trigger at one point.
Wow. Damn.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a way to go out.
It's very like, stupid what? There, like getting caught
what
up.
What killed Earl? Damn, yeah. R.I.P. yeah. Steve.
Yeah.
Like, what killed Earl? Was it the Rona that got him? No, it was the Nina.
The Nina. And the Santa Maria.
Damn. So he came out and said him and his wife are cool, apparently.
Supposedly, yeah, they're back speaking again.
Damn. I wonder how long she was in jail for.
If you post bond, probably not too long. So,
because if you're Earl, theoretically, Marcus, do you bail her out immediately? Or do you want to give her some space?
You give her 24 hours.
So you can get your story straight.
By the way, Nina also threatened the other women in the house, pointing the gun at them and yelling, "I got something for all you hoes."
Damn. Oh, man. See, again, this is why social distancing works, people.
Yeah.
If Earl had socially distanced from these quote-unquote hoes, he wouldn't have been in this situation. And you know, Marcus, I don't even know. What did you say his brother's name was, Bobby?
Seth.
He sounds like a Bobby, though. I don't even know Seth, but this can't be the first time he done got Earl in some trouble.
No. Mm-mm.
He sounds like one of them troublesome family members.
I mean, you gotta be a true brother to have an orgy with your flesh and blood.
Yeah. Shout out to Hall of Famer Earl Thomas.
Yes.
But Before we get to talking about Jordan and these Bulls, Marcus, I do want to shout out another Hall of Famer. And this is how I can tell we in 2020, Marcus, because I never thought in the whole history of my lifetime I would ever be sending a shout out to Tom Brady.
Oh, Tom.
I didn't think I'd do it, Marcus. I didn't think I'd do it. But your man Tom Brady, I don't know what it is, Marcus. I don't know if he finally got away from Boston and that whole vibe up there, got away from Kraft, or the fact that now that he's down in Florida, he's around a more colorful group of people, shall we say. But Tom Brady came out here and signed the it wasn't a petition, was it? It was a statement.
It was like a letter, essentially.
Yes, like a letter in regards to Ahmaud Arbery's death.
Yes.
And for those that don't know, he was the young brother that was shot in, was it Georgia?
Georgia, mm-hmm. In February.
Yeah, back in February, and we're just now seeing the video this month. And he was shot by two men, a father and his son, two white men, and he was unarmed while jogging, and they shot him in cold blood.
With a shotgun.
With a shotgun. And so, like Marcus said, this happened back in February, and it's finally now kind of hit the light of day now. The two men were arrested. They're facing charges, thankfully, for this. But a lot of athletes have talked about this. And you know, it's been kind of the athletes that you would expect, the usual suspects. But then when I see the list of names that had signed this letter – and Tom Brady showed up, Marcus Vandenberg. I didn't know what to think about my life in 2020.
I mean, Brady's never had the label being a bad guy, but he just has, I think, some questionable friends, let's just say.
Yes. Questionable friends who leave questionable clothing items in his locker.
Yes.
We kind of knew that he, like him and Kraft and I guess Trump to some extent had some type of relationship, but also Tom Brady has never been a political dude, right? He's never mm-hmm. been somebody that has kind of spoken out about stuff like this or even lent his name to something like this. So for him to even take the step of signing the letter like that, that surprised me coming from him.
I mean, I don't want to question his motives, but if you're going to a new team, you know that the NFL roster is majority black. If you're trying to fit in, put your best foot forward, let, you know, your teammates know I got your back on and off the field, mm-hmm. you know, that's not a bad time to sort of step up. And I mean, what happened was he signed the letter and then it's, you know, Tom Brady's in the headlines of, you know, Brady signs this letter. When in reality, there were dozens of players who signed this letter.
Yeah, Larry Fitzgerald was among them.
This is always the case. It always takes, sadly, sort of like a white person's stamp of approval for a lot of this stuff to happen. I mean, look, Kim Kardashian, she was involved in this as well. And once she sort of, I don't know if it was, you know, the timing was happened to work out, but when she sort of became outspoken and stuff, we got the arrest of the two guys. And, you know, for all that you can say about Kim, I think she is definitely a lot more socially and politically active in the right direction than her husband, who seems to be in any other camp. So,
like you're right, Marcus. And that was actually my, after I was like, whoa, Tom Brady, my second thought was, well, there's not a lot of scrappy receivers on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers squad. You know, not a lot of guys with high motors. Mm-hmm. He's going to be around a lot of naturally gifted athletes, so maybe it's not the best thing to alienate them before you've even taken a snap.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, like, whatever his motives were, Marcus Vandenberg, with this signing the letter, I will for once give Tom Brady some grudging praise because, he didn't have to do it. But I appreciate that, like you said, a white player of his stature put his name to this?
Are we going to see a likable Tom Brady this last year or last 2 years maybe?
That would be crazy if all of a sudden we got the real Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Like this kind of like Kobe. Like we talked about Kobe last week. Like for so long, Kobe was this image that he had perfectly crafted and constructed and modeled after Michael Jordan. And then those last 3 or 4 years, we got like real cool old man Kobe who just spoke his mind. Like if Tom Brady turns into that, I might actually have to start cheering for your Buccaneers.
I mean, part of me kind of wants to see him win a Super Bowl with the Bucs, just to like, just as a fucking to the Patriots. Yeah, just to show like, no, it was more than Belichick. It was more than the system. It was me. Like I was the one who was the reason behind this.
See, I hope that they both, like, I hope they're both petty. Like, I hope Tom is petty, and I hope Bill is petty and goes out and signs Cam Newton. And, like, they just both for sending shots to each other.
Yeah, Cam's still a free agent, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I don't, like, if I'm Cam, I'm not signing anything yet, though. Like,
yeah.
Like, do we even know when training camp is going to resume? Like, nope. There's a lot of unanswered questions. So, like, they put out the schedule, but the schedule doesn't mean anything right now.
Yeah.
So, you want to talk anything about your baseball real quick before we get to Jordan?
No,
I see your man out here. What's the kid's name? The pitcher?
Blake Snell.
Yeah, my man out here. Just I ain't trying to die for less money.
Paul Wall. Yeah, that's him.
And hey, I can't say that he's wrong, Marcus. Like I know people want stuff to get back to normal. But you and I were having a conversation off the air. Like, if my employer wanted me to start back full time for less money than we'd agree to, for what? Ooh.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. Baseball's in a tough spot because the players are rightfully so, trying to fight for the money, but at the same time, you do not want to be the sport that is sort of left out and not playing, because right. The sport as is already hurting. And I do think if they can get this shit together and start in July, they would have this window of maybe getting people back into the sport, because
being the only show in town,
yeah, there's nothing else. So. You know,
look at UFC. Like they did some of their biggest numbers on ESPN Plus.
Yeah,
was it last week?
Last Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah. Last Saturday.
700,000 pay per view buys. So as more and more sports start coming back, we get NASCAR back on Sunday.
Yep.
There's a golf thing this Sunday, and then the road golf thing is next Sunday with the Tiger Phil thing.
I'm surprised golf didn't come back earlier, because golf, out of all the sports, seems the most like you could do it without fans the most.
Yeah, I don't know why they waited until June, but they'll be back in June. And then we'll see with other sports like the UFC. The UFC is running 3 shows in 7 days. NASCAR is doing like 7 races in like 11 days. So we're going to get not only the sports coming back, but the sport is coming back at multiple times a week. So
yeah.
Baseball's window.
Markets, like, then that's the question. Like, I guess it's an even larger question for the country, but just keeping it to sports, do you think it's coming back too soon? Because obviously we all want our games to come back. We all want to be able to watch live sports again. But do you think that the leagues are maybe rushing back before we have all the information?
I think
is it worse to start and then maybe have to stop in a month or two because we get this rebound of COVID rather than just to wait for 2 months? Like what's the play there?
I think if you're believing the doctors and the fact that we might see a second round in the winter, I think it's better to start now.
Get what you can get on the table.
Get as much as you can now, and then sort of hope for the best in the winter.
Yeah. That's a good point.
In terms of starting too soon, look, if the people who are participating, and that includes not just the athletes, but the camera people, security, mm-hmm. like everyone involved, if they feel comfortable working and they are taking the proper measures that have been laid out by the CDC, and if they're getting properly tested, which I know the UFC did not do everything smoothly over the weekend, but they are at least testing anyone and everyone that is involved in this.
They were, what, these three people got popped
yes.
over the weekend.
As long as you're doing those things, and in UFC's case, they are paying for the testing, so they're not even, you know, tying up whatever healthcare system, then I think, yeah, let's do it. Where I think it's going to be interesting will be, once a vaccine is ready, how does that work? Are athletes, celebrities, rich people going to jump to the front of the line in the sake of money to pay for this thing?
I'm kind of torn on this whole vaccine market. So say like in 6 months to a year, we get a vaccine, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of torn because on the one hand, I want people like us to have access to it first. But on the other hand, I'm kind of like, I remember the last time they tested out some medicine on black folk first. So maybe let's let our Caucasian brothers and sisters take advantage first before, and we can kind of wait and see how it all works out before we start injecting this into our bodies.
Yeah. I think some of that will come down to how bad you need it, and you know, if you're
priority.
Yeah, if you're high risk and you are working a job that exposes you on a daily basis, then yeah, maybe you just need to, you know, take in hope for the best. But I think by the time it gets to the public, we should have a good sense of how this is actually going to work on people, because they've already started testing. So by the time you get through all of the testing that's required, you know, we'll see how it is.
But you know, one man who wouldn't need a vaccine, Marcus, one man who will be out there playing in the midst of COVID-19, because he will be fueled by competitiveness and pettiness alone. And that's Michael Jeffrey Jordan.
Yes.
Last Dance, parts six and seven.
Seven and eight.
Getting all mixed up here. Parts seven and eight. We watched this past weekend, Marcus. Let's start with seven. Because where we left off, we had Jordan kind of dealing with all the gambling stuff, you know, dealing with the death of his father, going to play baseball. And then in this episode, in seven and eight, and this is where I'm going to need your guidance, because I don't want to mix the timeline up. So where did we start at seven?
Seven starts with actually a funny Jerry Krause thing, because of course Jerry Krause is.
Yes. Oh man. Yeah. Yes. It's Craig Sager.
The late great Craig Sager,
who asked Jerry Krause, and I can't believe, like, Marcus, I've interviewed people before, and you've interviewed people before, obviously. My man Craig Sager ain't pulling no punches here.
No.
Like, so, Jerry, well, are you and Phil good, or are you guys, is the backstabbing still going on? And Jerry Krause kind of did a double take. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about, backstabbing. We're all good here, and that's an unprofessional question. And you know what? This interview is over, and he walks off. And I love, Jason Ayer, who did the documentary, because anybody else would have cut it right after Jerry Krause walked away. But Jason Ayer lets that clip run for a bit, and then you got one of the other reporters is like, good job, Craig. I'm like, yes, this whole documentary is fueled by petty people.
Yes. So that's how it starts, and then they dive into the Jordan's dad, his death, and
yep.
That how Jordan knew after the 93 finals that that was probably it for him.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, I'm mixing things up because I thought we did baseball last week. You did baseball this week, right?
Yeah, baseball's this week, this episode.
Okay,
Yeah. So,
that's where I got mixed up. Okay, yes.
Essentially, before his dad died, Jordan was already thinking about retirement, and he had been sort of talking about this with his father. And then, you know, they talked about the murder of James Jordan, who was shot and killed in his car in North Carolina in 1993.
Which is, I forgot the details, Marcus, mm-hmm. and it was just wild to me because there was a time where people would just pull over on the side of the road and go to sleep rather than try to, you know, risk falling asleep behind the wheel. It's like, yeah, like there's like that. That could have easily been like, you know, our grandparents or somebody, because you know that's something old people did back then. Like, yeah. Oh, I'm just gonna pull over to the side of the road and close my eyes for a couple of minutes. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, that was it for James Jordan.
Yeah, and I don't think they ever truly figured out the motive behind that. There were theories, of course, because it's Jordan, yeah. and the theories around his dad's death was like the tipping point for Jordan. And he was already, I think, sort of halfway out on basketball anyways, but this was sort of like, you know, the final straw. So they showed and I do not remember this story. Jordan threw out the first pitch at a White Sox Blue Jays
yes.
playoff game. And while at the game at Comiskey, he decides to quit. And, you know, they're trying to keep the story sort of under wraps, and eventually it gets out. And the next day is when they hold the press conference. And Jordan, who seemed to be the happiest in the room, because everyone else yes. seemed pretty down, and Jordan was like, look, I'm out. I'm 30 years old. I've won 3 titles. I'm rich. I'm done.
Like, yeah, I felt bad for like all the Bulls that just had to be dragged to this press conference.
Yeah.
Luke Longley ain't here for this, man.
I don't remember much. Do you remember when this happened?
I remember the press conference, but you know what I mean? Like, I remember that image mm-hmm. of Jordan and Reinsdorf and all his teammates behind him. I remember that image vividly. And Juanita, who is not really a character Ooh. In this documentary at all.
Who?
but, like, in terms of, like, the actual lead-up to it, like, I didn't remember that much at all. Like, I just remember Jordan having the press conference and then he was out. Like, I don't remember all the stuff leading up to it, but when they kind of show you what his mindset was and particularly the stuff with his dad and everybody kind of alluding to the fact that his gambling might have had something to do with James being killed, it's like, yeah, it makes sense that Michael was like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I don't remember this at all. I remember definitely his father dying, but the actual press conference, I don't remember. But on the flip side, I definitely remember November 7th, 1991, when Magic retired. Mm. I don't remember exactly where I was, listening on the radio, driving home. So I lived by the Forum, so we drove past the Forum as it was taking place after school. Like, all that, I was only 8 at the time, I remember that. But the Jordan thing, I remember the comeback for sure. I remember the facts and all that stuff, but
yeah.
I don't remember the retirement.
So yeah, like they do they go into his retirement, and then like I feel this would have been the part, and then maybe if ESPN is smart, they'll re-air the Jordan Rides the Bus 30 for 30. Because mm-hmm. I feel like if you pause The Last Dance here and then watch the Jordan Rides the Bus 30 for 30 and then restart The Last Dance, like that whole section about him playing minor league ball, like it takes on a whole new light. But they didn't spend a whole lot of time on the baseball thing, but I'm glad that they showed like that Jordan wasn't this laughing stock that so many people think in their minds when they think about Jordan playing baseball. They think he was like a joke, and it's like, nah, for what he was actually decent.
Yeah. So they fast forward to February 94, and it's when Jordan signs with the White Sox. And the reason is because Reinsdorf owned both teams, and mm-hmm. Jordan was able to make significant money as a minor league baseball player because he had this contract already with Reinsdorf. So he was not making, you know, $1,200 a month here. He was making millions playing baseball.
Yep.
And, you know, they mentioned how he ended up at AA despite his time off of playing baseball is because they were trying to accommodate the media, and having Jordan play rookie ball or A ball, the stadiums could not handle the media influx. So he ends up in AA Birmingham Barons, and starts his career off with a 13 game hitting streak under manager Tito Francona. And his career starts off well, and then, you know, baseball being baseball, it starts to catch up to him.
They start throwing him curveballs. Yes. Michael was he was Pedro Serrano. Mm-hmm. He can't hit the curveball.
Can't hit the curve. I remember this time period well, because up until this point I had played basketball and decided if Jordan was going to play baseball, I'm going to play baseball too. And, you know, I would play baseball like in the streets and with, you know, with family and stuff, and never played like organized baseball up until this point. I was probably, this was 1994, so I was 11.
I was going to say, the city newspaper put out a headline of you striking out talking about bagging Vandenberg.
I should have. So decided to sign up and play baseball. And I followed the sport. I knew the sport, just never played the sport. Nate, trying to play baseball at 11, it's very hard.
See, I was always like, I tried football when I was younger. Wasn't my sport. Basketball wasn't my sport. But I was in Little League baseball almost from the jump. Probably from the time I was 7 on. And then like from 7 all the way up through when I got to high school, I was playing some type of youth baseball. Matter of fact, I even went to Ozzie Smith had a camp down here like 2 or 3 years in a row. And I went to the Ozzie Smith camp, and 1 year I got like the MVP award for the most hustle from Ozzie Smith. So, yeah, baseball was my sport. So seeing Michael Jordan play baseball in 94, it was crazy, because it's like, oh, like I got excited about Mike like I got excited about Tebow when he went to the Mets. I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Y'all ain't ready for this? Just wait. You just wait and see what happens with Mike. And then Mike started slipping a little bit. But then he came back, Marcus. Mike started to get better as the season went on. But then the strike. If they had not a strike, Mike might have been an all-star. Mike might have been in Cooperstown right now. Mike would have been in 2 Hall of Fames.
Unlikely. The ceiling is the roof, though.
Mike would have won 3 back-to-back championships for the Chicago White Sox.
Jordan's 1 year at Birmingham, he played 127 games. He hit .202 with 3 home runs and 51 RBIs. So he was, runners on base. He was your man, and 30 stolen bases.
Hey, Mike was a threat. And then base and
only 114 strikeouts, which not terrible.
No. Who was it? Reinsdorf that was like, if he had gotten 1500 at bats, he probably would have made the majors.
Yeah. I don't buy that at all. defensively, he was horrible.
And he could have DH'd.
But I mean, listen, how many 6-foot-6 outfielders do you know?
Yeah.
There's not many.
How many 30-year-old rookies do you know?
Tim Tebow. For comparison, Tebow, by the way, Tebow in AA hit .273.
Okay, Tebow.
In 84 games, and then AAA last year hit .163.
Damn, what happened, Tebow?
in 77 games, only 4 home runs. So, yeah. I mean, Tebow's still playing baseball if baseball comes back, but we'll see.
I mean, the Mets might as well go ahead and call him up, man. For this pandemic, you need a miracle. Tim Tebow was that man for that miracle.
I thought for sure it would happen last year. No, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But if it didn't happen then I don't see it happening now.
Tebow, because see, you're not thinking outside the box, Marcus. What if one of your players for the New York Metropolitans comes down with COVID-19? Mm-hmm. We ain't got no vaccine, but you got Tebow. Tebow going to pray on him, put some hands on him, and heal him.
Yes.
He's a healer. He's going to lead the league in saves.
Well, if they don't have expanded rosters this year, you have more room to play with, so maybe you just bring
some people. Are they going to do the realigned divisions like they were talking about?
Yeah, that's the plan.
Interesting. How do you feel about that before we get back to the documentary?
I mean, at this point, I'll take any baseball. So the DH doesn't bother me. The realigned divisions doesn't bother me. The extra playoff teams doesn't bother me. And I do think that if they do come back, we'll find that 81 games goes by pretty fast. And, you know. I do think that whoever wins the championship, though, will sort of have a tiny, tiny, tiny asterisk by it. Like,
I would love it if Houston won it.
That would be pretty funny.
Oh, man. So, yeah, back to Jordan. So, Jordan is basically playing. Reinsdorf's like, yeah, if he had more at-bats, who knows what could have happened. But we'll never know because baseball goes on strike.
Yeah. It's 95 season happens, and you mentioned baseball strike happens. Jordan's not going to cross the picket line and decides, all right, well, can't play baseball. Can always go back to basketball and calls up BJ.
Oh, wait a minute. Because did we get to the Pippen moment yet, or did we pass it?
Not yet. We
okay. Scotty's heel turn.
We before we get to Jordan's return, we have the Scott Burrell segment.
Yes, yeah. Scott Burrell. why you do this man like that, Marcus Vandenberg?
Scott Burrell, by the way, who I think is the only player to be drafted in the first round in baseball and basketball.
Mm.
He was a first round pick of the Toronto Blue Jays, and he was a first round pick of the Charlotte Hornets, I believe, when he came out from UConn.
Yep.
So, like, Scott Burrell is a legitimate athlete. And at UConn, he was a pretty damn good basketball player, too.
Yeah.
Gets to the NBA. And his career, I think, never took off to what I thought it could have been or should have been.
No.
But he comes to the Bulls, and he is a important piece of that 98 team because he was at least a threat to score. But when he gets there, he, you know, introduced to Michael Jordan, and there's this montage of him just getting the work from Jordan in practice.
Yeah. Like, just Michael is being as disrespectful as you can be to this other man.
Yeah.
Like, to the point where Phil Jackson is getting on Michael for getting on Burrell. Which only makes Michael get on Burrell more.
Yeah. Including, if someone needs to, maybe you should do this post to Yahoo, but someone needs to go and do like a top 10 sort of quotes from The Last Dance.
Mm. Yes.
Included, and this might be top 3 at least, where you got Jordan talking to Scott Burrell, and he says, "Where's your mouth at now, ho?" while Burrell's shooting free throws.
Like, yeah, like Michael Jordan. Like, I can see Marcus why he didn't want this to get out to the public.
Yeah.
He calling his teammates all kind of bitches and hoes through 10 parts of this documentary series.
Yeah.
This
was the most uncomfortable part of Jordan and a teammate, was just, you know, this back and forth.
Yeah, and it, like, I like all this because we'll talk about it in a few minutes, Marcus, but all of this footage that they show leads to maybe the best moment of episode 7 and maybe one of the best moments of the whole documentary when Michael's talking about reflecting on his leadership style, I guess, his management style.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so like, yeah, he's getting on Burrell, and Phil is just like, you know, there's some guys aren't just gonna, you know, respond to that, and Scotty wasn't like that.
Yeah, and Burrell said he was just too nice. Like, and no, Jordan said that. Jordan said Burrell was just too nice. Like, yeah. He tried to get, you know, Scott to fight him in practice in a good way, and he was not going to fall for MJ's tricks.
Like, I'm a nice guy, Marcus. I would have been fought, Michael.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
I would have been fought, Michael. Listen, like, I ain't as good
if,
as you,
if Steve Kerr's going to fight Michael, like, yeah. Come on. Will Purdue's going to fight Michael.
He ain't going to be calling me all kind of bitches and hoes, Mike.
No, not with the cameras rolling, too.
so then is this when we go to the season where Scotty kind of blows up,
yeah,
as the leader of the Bulls?
They go back to the 94 season, the one season without Mike, and the Bulls are actually better than people expected at 94. Won 50 plus games, made the playoffs, and they faced the Knicks in the playoffs in game 3 against the Knicks late. I think it was a tie game late, and the Bulls decide to drop this play for Tony Kukoc and not for Scottie Pippen, who Pippen was the de facto leader at this point. And Pippen decides, if the play is not going to be for me, I'm not going in the game. And tells the coaches, like, I'm not going in. And Kukoc ends up making a shot. Bulls win. After the game, Grandpa Cartwright,
yes,
makes this whole speech directed towards Pippen, saying that he let the team down. Cartwright's crying. Pippen is crying. He apologizes to the team. They cut to Jordan. Jordan was talking about Pippen knows better than that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they cut back to Scotty. And Scotty's, you know, they asked Scotty,
yes,
would you change it if you had to do it over again? Scotty said no. He would have quit on his team again if he had the chance.
That was the Rick James, I don't step on Eddie's couch moment. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, because it was like Cartwright, Jordan, Phil, Steve Kerr, like, yeah. I think Buechler might have been in there. Like, everybody's talking about how great of a teammate Scotty was, and this was just one moment, and he, you know, he took it the wrong way, but Scotty would never do that to the team again. And they're like, yeah, Scotty, so would you do it again if you had the chance? Yeah, I do everything exactly the same. Like, I'm glad they put the footage in, though, man, because that's – I remember that vividly from back in the day, Mark. It's like, because I was cheering for that Bulls team because I wanted to see them keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a fan of Kukoc at the time. And then when Scotty decided not to come back in, and then it came out later after the fact that, like, he was mad about Phil drawing up the play for Tony. I was like, I can't even rock with you no more, Scotty.
Yeah. I mean, as Tony pointed out, like, he had made several buzzer beaters that season alone. And he made the shot. He made the shot in the playoffs, so it worked out. But, yeah, it's for all the Scotty love he got in episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
This seems like this is the real Scottie Pippen. Like, don't fall the sad story about being underpaid and having all these siblings. Nah, he probably a little selfish.
Yeah. And Mike said it, like, at the time, he was like, and I told Phil, like, Scottie's never going to be able to live this down. And to this day,
yeah,
people still bring that up when they talk about Scottie Pippen.
Yeah, I think it definitely hurts his how people view his career. And granted, part of his career is going to be tainted in the sense of he was always the number two to Michael, which is not a bad thing, but it's the truth. And then when he does have this one moment to shine, you have this sort of story to look back on. So,
Scotty was Kyrie before Kyrie.
Yeah, but I'm sure Scotty thinks the world is not flat, so.
So then Michael, like you said, gets with David Falk, says the facts, I'm back, just two words.
Yep.
And this is where it leads us into 45 Jordan.
Yeah. Oh, wait, did we miss something? We did. So that's chapter. I think that's the next episode. So chapter 7 ends with the Jordan speech you mentioned about.
Okay.
When we see Jordan tearing up.
Yeah, man. So what did you think about this? Because obviously you've seen it, you saw this before, but what did you think about it seeing it again? Like just because Michael, for those that haven't seen it, is basically talking about how he was just trying to make his teammates better. He was trying to push them to be the best they can be. And if you don't like that, then you don't understand how to win. And he's getting real emotional. And then all of a sudden, ladies and gentlemen, Michael Jeffrey Jordan, the greatest of all time, just gets so emotional. He's like, I need a break. Now, he didn't even say, I need a break. He's just like, break.
Break.
Like, and then, again, shout out to Air, because that's like a beautiful way to end that episode. And then we go to credits and move on to episode 8. So what did you make of Jordan right there? And the fact that I think Dan Le Batard said it best, Marcus, like out of everything that they had Michael talk about during this documentary so far, whether it was, you know, playing at UNC or his mother or his father's passing or, you know, the gambling stuff or the, you know, Scotty or Dennis or anything like that, the thing that got him the most emotional was talking about how he tried to push his teammates to greatness. And that was the thing that got to him the most. So what did you make of that?
I could relate to him in the sense of when he said leadership has a price. And, you know, I think as if you've ever been involved in management, there is a sort of a fine line between trying to be liked and trying to be respected. And Michael was not trying to be liked in that sense.
No.
I think he was very concerned about being liked from people outside of his peers, like the fans. But when it came to the people he was around, came to the people he was managing in a sense, like he understood that if they were going to win, he could not afford to be a nice guy. And I think what happens with managers is you sort of become the bad guy by default, because that's part of your job. Like you can't be your subordinate's friends. Like it doesn't work that way. So from that sense, I understood where he was coming from. Also, of all the things to be, I mean, the same episode we talked about the death of his father.
Right.
And it's this thing that is sort of the thing all these years that's eating at him inside of like, he's so caught up in how he's viewed all these years later. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, when people talk about celebrities and sort of like, they're not real people with real feelings, like they have feelings too. And their feelings might be a little, twisted and bizarre, but like, this one thing was really eating at him.
Yeah, it caught me off guard because I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, out of all the things Mike has talked about for all these hours during this documentary, this is what got him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, like you're wondering, like, has Mike been thinking about this for the past 20, 30 years? Like, the time he punched Steve Kerr or how he call Scott Burrell all kind of bitches and hoes, or, you know, the way that, you know, he used to ride Tony, or, you know, the way that he used to get on with Scotty or Horace or BJ or any of these guys that was his former teammates. Like, that's the stuff that keeps Michael Jordan up at night.
I mean,
like we'll his never, perception.
We might never know with Kobe's passing, but I mean, there are probably some similarities between Michael and Kobe when it came to his teammates. And, you know, I think definitely Powell sort of fit into the Pippen role of, you know, Kobe respected Powell on and off the court, but there are also guys that you know, Smush Parker, for example, that, you know, did not earn the respect of Kobe Bryant. And, you know, we saw Dwight Howard yesterday. Dwight was on Instagram talking about his year in LA and playing with Kobe and how egos might have gotten involved. And, you know, that stuff happens.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was really interesting. And again, a great way to kind of cap off that episode where, you know, Michael's left and then he has the itch to come back. And you know, we talk about baseball. We talk about his father passing. And then it comes down to a guy talking about his teammates. And he's emotional. And we go to break. And then we go into episode 8, Marcus.
Yes, episode 8 starts with the B.J. Armstrong revenge game because who would have forgot that game? I totally forgot about this game.
I forgot about that game. I forgot about the Horace Grant game. Like all of these mini Bulls family reunions I'd forgotten all about.
Yeah, B.J. was, I would say, a sixth man at best in Chicago.
Yeah.
He leaves Chicago, goes to Charlotte, becomes more of a starter, more of an impact player, and he essentially wins the game 2 against the Bulls, Bulls Hornets in the Eastern Conference semifinals.
Like Mike had one of his worst games.
Yeah.
And BJ was on fire. And your man BJ Armstrong, looking like he's 14 years old, Marcus Vandenberg, has the audacity to look over to the bench and shout at the Bulls and Phil Jackson.
Yeah. A little fist pump action.
And Michael Jordan does not forget this.
No, he does not. But before they go back and finish up MJ destroying BJ and the Hornets, they flash back to LeBradford Smith.
LeBradford Smith.
Who was a rookie on the Washington Bullets at the time. And LeBradford Smith went off in this. So the Bulls and the Bullets had a back-to-back. And the first game between the two was in Chicago. And LeBradford Smith goes off. And he has a career night. I think he had 37 points.
Yep.
Against the Bulls and Jordan. And Jordan tells a story that after the game, LeBradford tells Mike, "Nice game, Mike," after scoring 37. So that leads to Mike saying, you know, tomorrow in the first half, I'm going to do what that kid did in this entire game. So the next night they play in Washington and Jordan just lights him up. Jordan has 36 in the first half. And at the end of the story, Jordan admits that, yeah, he made it all up in his head. Like LeBradford Smith never said anything to him, but this is what he needed to take and motivate himself to get back at him.
Yeah, like this, like we've seen Petty Mike throughout all of these episodes. Episode 8 might have been the pettiest because we got the BJ stuff, we got the LeBradford Smith stuff, we got the Horace Grant stuff, we got the Gary Payton stuff coming up. Like, Mike is at his pettiest in episode 8.
Yeah, Mike just punching down at this point. I mean, going after BJ Armstrong and LeBradford Smith is just, come on.
Like the fact, you know, I think because when they show the BJ stuff again, like they go to Mike and he's talking and the way that Mike speaks about BJ Armstrong is borderline disrespectful in and of itself because he's like, BJ knows better than that. He used to be part of the team and he's going to act like this. BJ knows better. He knew what we were going to do to him. like it's some mafia stuff.
Hey, I mean, listen, Mike knows BJ's limits as a player. He's seen it. So, yeah, game 3, Mike just goes off on BJ. And, you know, the Bulls win that series easily after that point. And then, so that leads us to the 95 MLB strike and sort of the, the start of Jordan's return to basketball. So the baseball strike happens. MJ doesn't cross the picket line. And MJ calls BJ Armstrong. And they met up for, I think, lunch or breakfast or whatever. And then BJ says, well, why don't you come to practice to say hello to people? And, Mike goes. Of course, they have footage of this, of BJ pulling in, followed by MJ, which I don't know how they found footage of this stuff. And with Jordan there, BJ starts talking shit, and they start playing one-on-one. And next thing you know, you got the Scottie Pippen during the game, before the comeback, I think a few days before the comeback was announced, Scottie's shown on the bench wearing Jordans, and he's pointing to the bottom of the shoes and sort of telling Mike, come on back. And a few days later, the Fats goes out. That announces Jordan's return in 95.
And is this... I'm trying to think. Did we do Space Jam already? Did he go to the Jordan Dome?
That's not until later on.
Okay. So yeah, like right now it's like all the preamble to Jordan's triumphant return, and when he does, it's not in 23. It's in the 45, which that's a really interesting period of Jordan's, like that one brief moment, that brief stretch where he was 45. Mm-hmm. What was that? In homage to his baseball number, which was also, a tribute to his dad.
Yes, and the fact that 23 was retired, and yep. I think he, wanted to, at least for the rest of that season, keep it up there and not, go through that whole process. But yeah, so came back, we're in the 4-5, and first game back was against the Indiana Pacers, which I remember watching as a kid when that happened. Yep. Was not a great game from Jordan, but, first game back after 18 months off, whatever. And that sort of leads us to a couple games later, the double nickel game at MSG against the Knicks. And that was the first sign that, he was really back and he was going to be as good or if not better than what he was when he left the first time.
Yeah, and it was, I think we talked about it last time, Marcus, that when he retired, if in today's kind of sports environment, to be that good and still be in your prime and walk away, people are like, that's crazy. We got dudes like Tom Brady hanging on forever. We got Drew Brees out here hanging on forever. In the NBA, we got Vince Carter hanging on forever. But for somebody like Michael to be that good, to be that on that level, to leave that early, it was surprising. And so, yeah, I think when Jordan came back, I expected him to be good. And I, like you, I watched that Pacer game. And it was like, he back, but.
7-28 from the field.
Yeah, it's like he back, but. But then when he plays that game against the Knicks, and it's like, okay, Mike is back. I think he was like, oh, they might actually have a shot at doing something this year now that you added Jordan back to this team that was really good last year and just barely missed making a deep run.
Yeah. That leads us to the 95 playoffs, Magic Bulls, and
yes, the Horace Grant revenge game.
Yes, game one of that series. There was a play late in the game. Jordan's dribbling down, and Nick Anderson steals the ball from Jordan. That sort of wraps up game one for the Magic. And it's at that point he decides, no more 45. We're going back to 23.
Yes, because Nick Anderson, again, has the bright idea to try to throw shade at Michael Jordan. He's like 45, 8, 23?
Yeah, he said something smart. But that was the night. That was
how'd you take the ball? 45 ain't no 23. And then, Mike was like, okay, let me get my jersey back.
Yeah, that was So that was the Eastern Conference semis. That was the 95 Magic team that went to the finals and got swept by the Rockets, by the sixth seed Houston Rockets.
And again, we get more great Petty Jordan quotes here because he's talking about when they beat the Bulls and they're carrying Horace Grant of all people off the court, and Mike is like, Horace knows better. You don't come into our house and let them carry you. Like Michael is so offended by all these people.
Yeah.
And Horace is just like, hey, man, you know, y'all said I was a snitch. Y'all ran me out of town.
So, yeah, the Bulls are bounced. And, of course, in 96, that's when we get the 72-10 season. So,
yep.
Yeah, they lost in the semis, but they more than made up for it in the years to come. So let's see. So that leads us to Space Jam, which takes place the summer of 95. He films that, and in the process of filming Space Jam, he's trying to get his body, which was built for baseball, back into basketball shape. So they build the Jordan Dome at the Warner Brothers lot out here in Los Angeles. And in between filming, he would play these pickup games at Warner Brothers on the lot. And a lot of these NBA guys and college guys would come through and play with Jordan. And for Jordan, he said it was great because he did see guys up front and sort of do scatter reports on guys that he might have missed out on when he was out. So for him, it was... He was taking advantage of, you know, you got these guys thinking they're just coming to play, pick up, and, you know, stay in shape. But Jordan is plotting and thinking about, you know, what does Reggie Miller do? What does Dennis Rodman do? What does Juwan Howard do? So.
Another cool note from the Jordan Dome that they weren't able to put in the documentary I heard on the after show with Jalen Jacoby. Is Jason Ayer was like, it wasn't just college players and the NBA players that would come and play pickup, but it'd be like people like George Clooney would stop by. People like Prince would stop by. So you have celebrities mixed in with all these NBA players and college players, which is like ridiculous to think that you got Charles Barkley, Prince, Michael Jordan, and George Clooney playing on the same team.
Yeah. Hollywood, man, it's different.
That's how I wish was still around, man. If we could have had Prince in this documentary talking about Michael.
Oh, that'd been great.
That would have been amazing. Just, I kept telling him to pass me the ball.
Shoot the J.
Shoot the J, Michael. And then Michael would have had something petty about Prince he would have made up in his mind.
Yeah. It's just a short man wearing a blouse. You know, he knows better than that.
What's, you going to run your mouth now, ho? Damn, Mike.
Oh, Mike, come on. It's Prince.
So Michael, it being Michael, you know, it takes this pickup game and uses it, as you said, Marcus, to prepare for the upcoming season.
Yeah, so 96 season, Scottie's the only guy left from the first title run. So it's MJ, Scottie, and then... For MJ's sake, a bunch of guys he's not familiar with, including Kukoc. One of those new teammates is Steve Kerr, who they tell the story about the infamous fight between Kerr and Jordan in practice.
Yep.
And, you know, Kerr said he hauled off and hit him in the chest. And MJ hit Kerr in the eye. And MJ got tossed from practice as a result.
Yes, which is amazing. And the fact that Steve Kerr was like, hey, man, I might be the littlest dude out here, but you ain't just going to be talking to me any kind of way, Mike.
Yeah.
And because Michael was annoyed that it was Steve Kerr and Will Perdue that were coming in from the new team, and they were like taking it easy in practice and laughing and joking. And Mike was like, you know, this ain't time to play. And so Mike being Mike, he started getting on Steve Kerr, and finally Steve Kerr was like, nah, you ain't just going to be doing this to Steve Curry. Like, you don't know what I've been through. Like, and I think they do get into that later on in the documentary. I think Ayers said we get a little bit of Steve Kerr's backstory next week.
Oh, good. With his father and stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, with his father. So it's like, yeah, like Steve, if you don't know about Steve Kerr's backstory, like Steve Kerr ain't just some silver spoon, like soft cat off, from suburbia. Like Steve Kerr been through some things, so he wasn't just going to take this from Mike. And Mike's like, that's when I gained respect for Steve Kerr. Like, he stood up to me.
Yeah, I mean,
which is, again, talking about your management analogy, Marcus, and you know, leadership isn't always easy. Like, leadership isn't always easy, but I think Michael made it harder than it needed to be at times.
Yeah,
maybe that's why he was crying at the end of the last episode, because there's a part of Michael that I think wanted to have a closer relationship with his teammates, but because of the way he was and what drove him to be the best, there was going to be a distance that had to be there between him and Scotty, or him and BJ, or him and Kukoc, or Kerr, or any of these guys. They couldn't be best friends. They couldn't be LeBron and D-Wade. You know, they couldn't be Steph and Clay. They couldn't be guys like that, because that's not how Mike was wired.
Yeah, and you know, going back to Kobe, like I don't know if Kobe had a true friend off the court that was sort of within NBA circles. Yeah. Like, they're just wired differently.
Yeah.
So yeah, they MJ did apologize and got his number and reached out and. He told him, like, look, he earned his respect for standing up to him, and that the relationship dramatically improved as a result. And after that point, they were good. But sometimes you got to step to the bully.
Look, Steve Kerr is like, hey, man, if taking that punch got me a gig with the Spurs and ultimately led to a gig with the Warriors, it was worth it.
Yeah.
I got championships because of that punch.
he's had a bunch of rings.
Yep. So we get kind of the backstory, not really in depth, but we get to meet like Steve and he's kind of the new energy on this team. We got Tony, we've got Dennis, we've got Scotty, we've got Mike. Like, those are the kind of the main players for this run of the Bulls.
Yeah. Don't forget Randy Brown. Where's Randy Brown in this documentary?
There are so many anonymous white Bulls that I'm like, whenever they do like the cutaways and the up close interviews, I'm like, now is that, if they don't put their names underneath them, if they don't key them in the lower third, I'm like, is that Paxson or Bushler? Is that Longley?
Or Purdue? Or Bill Winnington?
Is that Winnington?
Yeah.
The only one I know for sure, like, I know Tony and I know Steve Kerr. Everybody else is random white bench player.
Yeah, I mean, look, these are the Bull centers in 95-96. Bill Winnington, Luke Longley, James Edwards. If Jordan's not the joke based on his big men, I don't know what else to tell you.
Oh, was Cartwright their best?
No, I feel like Luke Longley was better than Cartwright, right?
Like that's a low bar. Didn't they have Parrish for a little bit, or was he after this?
Which Parrish?
The Bulls had Robert Parrish for like a season.
Early on. That was early in Jordan's career.
Okay. I was like, because I remember the Chief like limping his way down the court.
Yeah. Longley, 95-96, 9 points, 5 rebounds.
What's Cartwright? Cartwright got to be better than that.
Let's see. Bill Cartwright.
Plus he got intangibles, Marcus. He got leadership.
Cartwright's best season in Chicago, 88-89, 12.6 rebounds.
Okay, Bill.
11 points, 6 rebounds, 9 points, 6 rebounds.
He giving you 6 rebounds a night.
Yeah.
If you can count on anything from Bill Cartwright, you getting them 6 rebounds.
All right, so we'll say Cartwright was Jordan's best center.
Yeah, that's terrible. Like, even in his prime, I never thought Bill Cartwright was a good center.
Oh, in New York, he was good. As like a rookie.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was late 70s. That was well before even your time.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's like Brother Jamie from Mr. Throwback Thursday's era. Those Knicks of the 70s. The Phil Jackson era.
Yes. So yeah, the Bulls go 72-10. And that leads us to the 96 finals.
Say, unlike the Golden State Warriors, when they had their historic run.
Yeah, they actually finished the job. So yeah, 96 finals, Bulls Sonics. I was a fan of the Sonics team.
I always liked the Supersonics, man. They like the Supersonics was a good organization. They had a great logo, great look,
great atmosphere of the games. I mean,
great atmosphere. Yeah,
the arena Lenny was Wilkins, always loud.
George Karl.
95-96 team. Let's see: Peyton Perkins, Taylor yep. Shrimp, Nate McMillan, Sean Kemp, Irvin Johnson.
Irvin Johnson.
Yes.
The non-magical Irvin Johnson.
Yes. So this team, they weren't, on paper they weren't scrubs, but they were heavy underdogs going into this NBA Finals.
Yeah.
And
they were no Phoenix Suns.
No, they were not. And if you thought Seattle had any chance of winning, that went out the window before game one when Jordan tells his story about he was out to dinner and George Karl walks by MJ at dinner during the finals and decides not to speak to MJ. Now, this is important because, A, number one, there's a mutual respect there. But two, both men are Carolina guys. And
yeah.
In Jordan's eyes, he said, it's a crotch of shit. And that was all he needed. It became personal.
And he's, granted, like, mind you, ladies and gentlemen, Jordan said that now. Like, this was recent Jordan being interviewed today. This was like
2019 Jordan, yeah.
Yeah, this is 2019 MJ, so, and he was still heated about this.
Yeah.
And it's like, who knows? Maybe George Karl didn't see the man, Marcus. Who knows how big this restaurant was?
Well, did you see George Karl this week?
No.
He tweeted about this. Let me
he talked about it?
Yeah, he did.
like again, Michael is taking like little tiny kernels of something and turning it into a big tree.
Let's see. All right, here's the tweet. George Karl, I told my team to avoid Michael during the 96 finals. We reasoned he would find a way to exploit communication as motivation. I ignored Michael at dinner to honor the directive. The last dance makes it seem like Michael used that to fuel him. That's false. The Bulls detailed us. Exclamation point. So it was see, all part of a plan.
Like, what do you like? He damned if you do, damned if you don't, Marcus. Because if he talks to Michael and says, "Hey, Michael, good to see you," Michael's gonna be like, "Good to see you.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that, George?" And use that as motivation. But if he doesn't talk to Michael, Michael says he's ignoring him. So what is the man supposed to do, Marcus?
Yeah. It's, I mean, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Michael's going to find a way to make it a slight.
Yeah. So
George could have sent Michael a bottle of wine over to the table, and Michael would have been like, oh, it's only a 74?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you think of me, George Karl? Like, damn, Michael, I'm gonna need you to calm down, Michael. You can't be petty all the time, sir.
No, yeah.
Even Marcus Vandenberg takes a night off.
Yes, I enjoy dinner, without making enemies. So,
So that leads us to the very, very end.
Yeah.
Or almost the end. The end is the game six. But before that, it's MJ reacting to Gary Payton, who Payton swears that, you know, he would have had something for Jordan. And of course, this is the iPad scene, another iPad scene where
We got two gifts out of this documentary with Jordan looking at the iPad.
Yes.
Because, of course, we remember the famous one with Isaiah Thomas where Michael's looking at the iPad, listening to Isaiah's explanation. But then we get this one where Gary Payton is saying that the game where George Karl finally puts him on Michael defensively, and Michael has an off night. Gary's like, you know, if we would have did that the whole series, who knows what would have happened? Because I was shutting Michael down. Mm-hmm. And your man, Michael Jeffrey Jordan, just starts laughing in this man's face.
Like a maniac. Yes.
Yes. And yeah, it is a wonderful gift already. But yeah, like, this just goes to show you, Marcus Vandenberg, like, again, A, I love that Air had the presence of mind to show different people these recordings, because you do get some genuine reactions. But then B, like, Michael is still playing the game in his mind with all these individuals in the movie.
Yeah, like that. This idea that he, you know, retired and has now become cordial with people, and no, he's not at all.
Petty to the grave.
Yes.
He is the Deontay Wilder of Petty to this day.
Yeah.
Like, Michael, how long are you going to hold a grudge against Gary Payton to this day?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Michael, how long are you going to hold a grudge against LeBranford Smith to this day?
He did admit he had no problem with the glove. So he just thought the comment was funny, I think.
So where do we leave off in this one?
It ends with them winning on Father's Day, the first title after the death of his father. And
Michael sobbing in the locker room.
Sobbing on the floor in the locker room. And so that's how it ends.
Yep. And that leads us to episodes 9 and 10, the finale of The Last Dance, which as of Sunday night, like, Jason Aaron was like, we probably won't have this thing finished episode 10 until Wednesday. Like, so yesterday, from the time we're recording this episode of the Kings of Sport, yesterday they finished the documentary that's going to air Sunday, which is crazy.
Yeah.
So
I did a screener and they said nope. So
yeah, I bet you ain't nobody seeing this one. Early.
No one's going to be seeing this ahead of time. I don't think so.
Because it's just going to be 2 hours of Michael just looking straight into the camera and talking shit. Just. It's 2 hours of Michael talking about Juanita. Like, whoa, I didn't see this coming.
Plot twist.
Like, because we don't even really spend time talking about Michael's, like, current family at all. Like, we don't see his kids, really. Mm-hmm. Like, the new wife is not mentioned in this interview. I mean, in this documentary.
I mean,
we don't hear anything.
It wouldn't fit, though, with what they're doing.
No, but, I mean, the kids, maybe.
Juanita would. But
Juanita Wood and the kids, like, maybe because especially if they do the Hall of Fame in episode 10.
Yeah.
Like, we got to hear the reaction from the kids.
Poor Marcus. Just
show the kids the iPad. Look, show the kids talking like, it really hurt my feelings when my father said that. I thought that we had a better relationship, and they show him Michaelis on the iPad. Laughing. He's like, ah! like, you ain't shit, kid. Close your mouth, ho. Like, sir, that's your son.
Yeah.
But yeah, so far out of these 8 episodes, Marcus, like, what have you made of the documentary? Obviously, like you said when we started, you had seen an advanced screener of this, but you know, kind of watching it for the past month and also seeing how social media and other people and athletes have reacted to this, what have you made of it?
Well, I'm very surprised that more people have not tried to knock Jordan off his pedestal. Talking to young people who, I did see ESPN had a list out yesterday at the top 74 players. And of course, Jordan's one because he is number one. And LeBron was two. And I did see some people say, oh,
Okay.
Bronze one, Jordan's two, which is absurd. But
yeah,
we have not seen a lot of anti-Jordan chatter on social media during this thing from people who weren't around for Jordan's career, which I thought for sure we would get.
If anything, they've either A, decided to be quiet when grown folks is talking.
Yes.
Or B, they're like, wow, you know, I always heard about them, but I didn't know this dude was that good.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, and again, like to the LeBron point, like, yeah, I love LeBron. Like, I think LeBron is the best of his era, but he ain't no MJ. Like, Jordan is number one for a reason. And like, as much as I respect LeBron for his on the court stuff and for the off the court stuff and the social activism, like, you ain't getting a 10-part series about LeBron. Like, you might could get a 4 or 5-part series at best, but you ain't getting no 10-part series.
Yeah.
So, like, I thought it's been really good, Marcus. Like, even, like, I know you said there was a part in the middle where it kind of dipped. I never felt that dip.
I think that was episode, maybe it was six?
Six. The
Well, that was the gambling. Episode. Yeah.
Slim Bula.
Yeah.
Now, Slim Bula was the star of that one. So yeah, like outside of the first two episodes, or really just the first episode, which I thought was a little bit slow, I've enjoyed every one of them. Like, I think Jason Eyre has like done a great job with this. He's punched his ticket. Like, whatever he does next, he gonna make money off of. He's done a great job with not only the way that he's set things up from a visual standpoint, but the music choices have been excellent, including one this past week, which should have been familiar to fans of this show.
Yes.
Dropping a little Run DMC in when Michael came back. So yeah, like I really enjoyed it. And I think I'm looking forward to seeing what 9 and 10 bring. So yeah, like I think the question is, what does ESPN do now? Like, because I already saw during episodes 7 and 8, they were showing ads for new 30 for 30s coming out in the summer. Like, what is ESPN going to do now? Because nothing they have in the chamber is going to pop like this Jordan stuff, unless it's live sports again.
Yeah, I mean, they have the Lance documentary, which is a 2-part documentary that starts after The Last Dance. There's a Bruce Lee documentary.
That one might be interesting. There's Like Water.
Yeah, and then there's one on the home run chase between McGuire and Sosa, which could be good as well. So they have those three, which will take you into June.
Look, the McGuire-Sosa one's going to be fun just to see clips of old Sammy Sosa and then clips of current Sammy Sosa talking about him. Like, who is this white man talking about Sammy Sosa?
Yeah, if you haven't seen Sammy Sosa since, you know, 98, you're in for a surprise.
It's like we went from Sammy to Samuel.
Yes.
Samuel Sosa here, former Chicago Cub. But yeah, so shout out to Michael for being so petty, because his pettiness fueled this documentary, Marcus.
It truly did.
So, you think we should let the people know now about our planned guest for next week?
We should.
We got a special guest joining us next week on the Kings of Sport to discuss the finale of The Last Dance. And Marcus, I'll let you do the honors.
Yeah, so on next week's show, longtime NBA fan John Pollock will join the show to give his thoughts on all 10 episodes of The Last Dance.
Yes. So John will be joining us next week. I think it's been maybe a year since we talked to John last on the Kings of Sport.
Has it been that long?
Yes, you and I have talked to
him. Which fake anniversary did we celebrate with them?
Individually. I was going to say, it had to have been around our anniversary.
Which was what,
last year? Yeah.
Let me see, March 2019.
I think we had John Way on at the same time.
No, actually, knowing us, we probably did it in April because we're black like that. So let me check April.
Yeah, that makes sense because it would have been the lead up to WrestleMania too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, you talked to John and Wade separately, and I've talked to them, obviously, being on post. But we haven't, as the Kings of Sport, talked to John Andor Way in probably a year.
It's May 24th. We had him on to episode 250, which, of course,
we
celebrated. We talked about Double or Nothing.
Okay. Interesting. And Double or Nothing is right around the corner.
That's right. Oh, yeah. So it's been 1 year. It's May 24th. So, yeah, it'll be almost a year to the day.
Yeah, so that'll be cool. So we'll talk to John about The Last Dance. Maybe we'll hit him with some UFC and wrestling questions while we got him here. So, yeah, stay tuned for that. If you're a fan of post-wrestling, John will be with us next week. But, Marcus, before we get out of here, anything that you want to let the people know about? Where can they find you on social media? And, you know, who knows? Maybe they can look to you for knowledge. These young kids that weren't around during Michael Jordan's time, they can look to you for knowledge about how great LeBradford Smith was.
LeBradford Smith wasn't great.
He was great for one night, just like B.J. Armstrong.
Great for one night. And after that, much like many other Bullets and Wizards at the time.
Yes. Let's see. I remember LeBradford Smith from Tecmo Bay. You remember that game, Tecmo NBA?
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo, like, that was a cool little game. Doc Rivers was on the Clippers at the time as a player.
He was out the lead by 24.
LeBradford Smith. Wow.
Yeah.
Grand opening, grand closing.
Yeah, first round pick from Louisville. And didn't play too
long. What's he doing now?
I don't know. I know he was interviewed during this whole thing. Someone caught up with him and got his thoughts on the micro story. But let's see. But, the witchy doesn't say what he's doing. So,
damn. Well, at least he's not in jail.
That is true.
At least he's not in jail or being held at gunpoint by his wife.
That is true. Also. But that also is an orgy, though. So that's a negative, I guess.
Hey, I mean, now is not the time for orgies, Marcus. Maybe next year.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, again, like, people, it's gonna be a lot of babies being produced over the next calendar year, Marcus. Between people stuck in quarantine and when people are finally allowed outside the house, it's gonna be a lot of illicit, unprotected sex.
Becky Lynch. Seth Rollins.
Yeah, congratulations. We got Seth and Becky having a baby, so.
Yeah. So, yes. Social media. Marco Will, MarcoWill.
All right. You can find me on social media at N8, MOZAIK, at Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow the show at Cospod, KOS_POD. Check out the Facebook page, Facebook.com/Kings of Sport. Check out the Patreon, Patreon.com/Kings of Sport. Check me out on the Rocky Maivia Picture Show over on Post Wrestling. We got t-shirts now that you can cop. Store.postwrestling.com. And Marcus and I will be back next week for our big finale. We're going to have to go back to normal, Marcus. Like it feels like the last month. We've known what we're going to do each and every week. Now we've actually got to do work and find stories again.
Well, if you want to break down NASCAR, I mean, starts back Sunday.
we can get that guy that was fired on the show.
Oh, Kyle Larson?
Kyle Larson, yeah. Ask him how he really feels now.
Yeah.
Like my dude, you messed up your real job by cussing at people on your fake job.
Mm-hmm.
What part of the game is that?
Yeah.
You got fired from real racing for something you said, video game racing, man.
But Randy Orton said it, and he wasn't fired.
That would be like Kelly Olynyk getting fired from who? I don't know who he's playing for now.
Miami.
I was going to say maybe the Heat. It'd be like Kelly Olynyk getting fired from the Heat for cussing some little black kid out on NBA 2K.
Yeah.
Like, Kelly, come on, man. Like, niggas shit him. That's going to do it for this week. Yeah, no, like, Skype is like, we don't want those problems. Like, it's a pandemic. We got people protesting at city halls all over the country. armed militias. So yeah, Skype is like, nah, I'm gonna protect you right here, brother.
Yeah.
But that's gonna do it for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. You can check us out next week with our special guest John Pollock to wrap up our series on the Last Dance documentary. So, for Marcus Vandenberg, for Michael Jeffrey Jordan, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. And remember, when I come back like Jordan, wearing the 4-5, it ain't to play games with you. It's to aim at you, probably maim you. If I owe you, I'm blowing you to smithereens, Scott Burrell. Because you've been down with the Kings.
What the hell are you waiting for? Look what you made me do. Look what I made for you. Knew if I paid my dues, how will they pay you? When you first come in the game, they try to play you. Then you drop a couple of hits. Look how they wave to you. From R.C. to Madison Square, to the only thing that matters in just a matter of years. Yeah. As fate would have it, J status appears to be at an all-time high. Perfect time to say goodbye. When I come back like Jordan, wearing the 4-5. It ain't to play games with you, it's to aim at you. Probably maim you. If I owe you, I'm blowing you to smithereens. Cop sucker, take one for your team. And I need you to remember one thing. I came, I saw, I conquered. From record sales, sold out concerts. So motherfucker, if you want this encore, I need you to scream till your lungs get sore.
Ow! It's star time. This man is mean. He's killing all y'all jive turkeys. Y'all want more than Jigga Man. But if y'all want more than Jigga Man, then I need y'all to help me bring him back to the stage. Stay home. Come on, say it. Hold up, hold up. Are y'all out there?
Wide world of sports is going on here.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's bad. D-A-double-D-Y, that's ass.
Let me tell you something, Mean Gene. I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna leave it all on the mat, cause that's what I do when I get it done, so I can do it. Yeah!
I'm on a new level.